Question. If you aren't Muslim, why do you think many Muslim women veil or cover up? Well, Professor Sahar Amer poses that question to students every year. The answers range from piety to oppression to they're hiding something. Professor says the reasons may surprise people, including veiling is sometimes a progressive statement. Her new book is What is Veiling? She teaches Arabic and Islamic studies at the University of Sydney, and she joins us from the studios of the Australian Broadcasting Corporation. So, Professor, many reasons for veiling, also many veils. Start with hijab.
Yes, hijab is the generic term for veiling, and this is probably the most commonly used to refer to modest clothing. So basically a headscarf and long sleeve shirt and maybe long skirts or pants. It does not cover the face.
Yeah. And what about an abaya?
An abaya is more of an overcoat, so it's more like a big graduation gown. I mean, that's what it looks like. And so it's something that a Muslim woman would wear over any of their clothing just to make it modest looking in an instant.
There's so many more. There's chador.
Chador. Chador is, of course, the kind of veiling that we associate with Iran, a cape that is worn over the head and that also covers the entire body and that is usually held in place with one hand.
So many different kinds of veils. And as we said, so many different reasons. But is it required by the Quran and the Muslim faith that women cover themselves? We were looking at the terrific article in the recent New York Times style section about women posting pictures on Instagram of their headscarves, claiming it as fashion statement. And they're right in her article. She writes, women are told to cover their bodies, may show only hands, feet, and face in the Quran. You straight out say in your book, the Quran does not require veiling.
Yes, this is, of course, one of the most controversial points. Most Muslims who veil and most, in fact, probably all non-Muslims believe that this veiling is a requirement of Islam and that it's spelled out explicitly and clearly in the holy book of Muslims, the Quran. However, as many scholars have recently pointed out, the word veiling is never used in the Quran. And the second thing is that there are verses who do talk about women's clothing. However, in none of these verses is it explicitly indicated that women must veil. This is an interpretation that was imposed on the Quran several centuries later.
And yes. You say for this perception that it's a symbol of women who are oppressed, you say it's just a minority of women who are actually forced to cover themselves in some way by, for instance, their families. But aren't women forced by governments?
Yes, and we think immediately of Saudi Arabia, we think of the Sudan, Iran, and the Aceh province in Indonesia. But basically, all women in other societies really wear the veil either because of piety or because of a variety of reasons that I cover in my book.
Well, and let's just look a little bit at the history. I was already thinking of the image of I Dream of Jeannie when you actually mentioned the character Jeannie, because you were talking about a time when veiled women were seen as erotic and mysterious, members of a harem. Tell us more about that.
Yes. The notion of Muslim women as erotic figures and the veil as an image of the harem and of sexuality is something that was developed during the period of imperialism, during the period of European colonization of much of Muslim majority societies. And during that time, veiling Muslim women was considered an oppression that European wanted to liberate the Arab societies from.
But as you were also saying, they were also seen as almost seductresses.
Right.
There was the book Arabian Nights.
Yes.
But now there's the film for kids, Aladdin.
Yes. Aladdin. And my students, of course, always love Aladdin. But when you start to think about it and you think about how Jasmine, for example, is dressed, and the belly dancers who are in the film, you would think that this is how Muslim women are really dressed. And so, in a way, the veil, as oppression has as its other side of the coin, is that the veil as seduction. We want to lift the veil in order to see what lies behind it. We see both images functioning side by side. The completely covered woman and the Western man who wants to penetrate into this harem in order to have those Oriental Muslim women.
Well, no wonder. There have been increasingly groups of progressive Muslim women who want to take the veil back and give it their own meaning. In fact, there are progressive Muslim women who really resent, Western feminists who feel that they need saving. But is that fair? We remember, even before 9/11, there was an email that circulated telling about women in Afghanistan, a country that was not on most people's radar, who were being forced to wear a burqa by this group, the Taliban. And then, before the war in Iraq, we know women were relatively free, and so many women were under Saddam Hussein. But then we read books like Christine Asquith's Sisters in War about how women retreated into veils as violence started. It doesn't feel like the sort of the white man's burden. It feels like there was a genuine need to help women who were forced to veil.
Yeah. I think that there are some veiling practices that are certainly oppressive to women. However, the women retreating to veiling and feeling very afraid of going out are oftentimes the results of war, not of particular regional practices that might have been going on for centuries. When the war against Afghanistan started, we heard in the news and presented by even Laura Bush about how we needed to go and liberate the women of Afghanistan. Why isn't America, for example, talking about going and liberating the women of Saudi Arabia?
Zahra Amer of the University of Sydney. Her new book is What is Veiling? So if you're listening and you veil, we'd love to hear from you. How do you feel when you see a veil? Your thoughts at hereandnow.org. It's Here and Now, and we've been talking to Professor Zahra Amer. Her new book, What is Veiling?, looks at Muslim women covering up, an attempt to remove some of the fear she says she understands that some non-Muslims have when they see veils. All Muslims are told to dress modestly, but Professor Amer says they choose to wear veils for different reasons, because they think it's required by their faith, the professor says it's not, or because it makes them feel more pious. Some women are ordered to cover up by their governments, for instance, Iran. Others wear a veil to defy government. Who say they can't wear one. France comes to mind. Still other women wear a veil in solidarity with women who are forced to wear one. And frankly, says the professor, there are women who veil because they don't have to do their hair. And a new young generation of women posting selfies of their headscarves with thousands of Instagram followers as a proud statement of Muslim fashion. Zahra was just saying that wars, maybe launched to liberate women, have driven them into the veil and the chaos that ensues. But Zahra, you remind us veiling existed before Islam, and for centuries various forms of veils were common in the Muslim world. Then there was a moment in the 1900s when veiling fell out of favor. So what happened then, and why is it coming back now outside, say, of war zones?
Well, it's very interesting, and my students are always amazed when I tell them that basically from the 1920s until about the 1980s, most women in Muslim-majority societies did not wear the veil. And in fact, they were dressing in precisely the exact same fashion as European or American fashion. And when I look back at pictures of my mother, for example, and of her friends in the 1950s and 60s, they are dressed exactly the same way that you would see anybody in the U.S. or in Europe dressing at that time. And then in the 1980s, we do indeed see a new wave of reveiling. One of the main reasons that is often advanced is how this is the failure of Arab nationalism, that people felt that, you know, the Arab nationalism did not help Arabs and Muslims succeed against Western imperialism and the creation of Israel. So they felt that if they returned to their Muslim identity instead of an Arab identity, that would allow them to get strong again, like at the height of Islamic power and empire under the Ottomans. Mm. And so this return to veiling is a way of reclaiming Islamic identity in order to feel strong against Western and European powers.
Well, and you detail so many other reasons. For instance, In France, there was a ban on headscarves, and young girls couldn't go to school because they were torn between wearing them and going to school. On the other hand, in Iran, coverings were required, and girls resisted that there. They did something called the bad hijab.
Yeah.
What's that?
Yeah, the bad hijab is basically wearing hijab, obeying the letter of the law, but challenging it by maybe letting some highlighted hair peek underneath the headscarf and wearing tighter type of chador. Technically, they are covered. However, they're covered perhaps in a less modest way than the government might want.
And to modern day here in the U.S., we have a colleague who veils. She is stunning, and her clothing is stunning. There are often people who say, wow, I'd give anything, you know, on bad hair days. And you say there are Muslim women who appreciate a veil on a bad hair day. But we're seeing so many articles about Muslim fashion, a multi-million dollar industry. How does that impact women veiling?
One can see fashion as a way, again, of putting in question, of challenging repressive types of veiling. But also, I think Islamic fashion also is part of how Muslim women express their modernity and their cosmopolitanism by showing that they can be actively engaged in the world while being observant of their religion and their cultures.
Eyal, you have a great quote in your book, and it might have been from the terrific NPR series asking Muslim women why they veil. We'll link people to that at hereandnow.org. But you quote a young woman saying, I wish the veil was invisible because what I really want to do, it's between me and my God. I wish it didn't have all these other meanings for other people because I'd wear it anyway, even if it was invisible. But how about you, Sahar Amer? You were born in Egypt. You mentioned your mom didn't veil. You talk about young women today who veil because their mothers didn't. It's sort of a rebellion. You went to school at Bryn Mawr in Pennsylvania, as we said, taught in North Carolina. Now you're in Australia. You veiled, and you were one of the women who unveiled. Why?
Yes. I started veiling while I was in Egypt, and this was precisely at that moment when there is like all of this pious movement, a sense of community and spirituality that was really sweeping my entire generation. And then, so I felt really very strong and very much part of this beautiful community while I was in Egypt during the summer. And when I went back to Bryn Mawr, I was the only one at Bryn Mawr who veiled at the time. And I felt extremely lonely, and I felt that the only thing that mattered about me was what I was wearing on my head. And people just were asking questions and questions and questions. And it, in a way, it forced me to examine why did I start to veil? Why was I doing it? And was I being modest, if this is really what I was trying to do, when I am basically the elephant in the room each time that I was anywhere? And so I decided to take off my veil because I felt I didn't have the strength, to be perfectly honest. And also, I started looking at the spirit of the Quran rather than the letter of the Quran. And I decided that one can be modest without wearing a headscarf, and that one could be an equally good Muslim regardless of what one is wearing.
But did you miss it? You quote another young woman who took her headscarf off. Very painful. And she said it felt like she wasn't wearing a shirt. She felt naked.
It was extremely difficult. It was extremely embarrassing. I felt somewhere like hypocritical. I don't think that I would go back to wearing hijab now, precisely because I'm more aware of the layers of interpretation that have been on the Quran. So I respect women who wear the hijab because they believe that it's a requirement for of Muslims. But I think that there are many others who also believe that they're being good Muslims without wearing hijab.
Well, your book has everything, including the jokes that are made in Egypt about hijabs. There's cartoons with a little boy in the middle of a room, a gathering of women, and he's yelling, Mom! He doesn't know which is his.
Yeah.
And two men standing in a room with a group of women fully veiled head to toe. And the men say to each other, you know, you never know when your wife is watching you. But this, it's also very sad. You have a cousin who came to visit you once when you were young, and she was wearing her head covering. And you weren't, but you were walking along and some boys threw stones at her.
Yeah, that, and that was in New Jersey. That was well before 9/11. It was pretty scary because this was when I realized how dangerous it can be for women in Muslim minority societies to be wearing a clothing that so few people understand.
Well, as you note in your book, you understand how people who don't understand can have some of the fears that they have. You know, what's going on under there? And your book helps explain. Sahar Armour, author of What is Veiling? Professor, thank you so much.
Thank you so much for having me.